Welcome to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is how to ask anyone for anything. And the number's called 1-866-254-1579. It's toll-free, 866-254-1579. Or from outside the United States, you can reach the show on 760-918-4300. We're going to be taking your calls about having what you want in any area of your life. But I want to set the table with a few stories about asking. You know, Byron Katie is somewhat famous for saying, if I had a prayer, it would be this: God spare me from the desire for love, approval, or appreciation. Amen. And she's also known for one of the things that I've heard her say that I think is quite amazing is you could have anything in life that you want if you're willing to ask 1,000 people for it. And most people, when I talk to them about that, that makes sense to them. But the idea of actually asking 1,000 people and, you know, being turned down 999 times, somehow that thought is enough to stop them from actually asking. And so we're going to really be exploring that in the show this week. One of my coaches is a guy named Steve Hardison. And one of my favorite stories about him dates back to when he was a missionary for the Mormon Church. He was on his mission. And one time he went up to a house and he began speaking about the church's teaching to a man who entered the door. And, you know, I'm sure I haven't talked to him about this in depth, but I'm sure he'd experienced a few doors being slammed over the years. But for whatever reason, on this particular day, the guy he was talking to actually punched him in the face, and Steve's nose began to bleed. And without missing a beat, Steve just said, could I have a towel? Because I don't want to bleed on your porch. And I really, you know, want to find out more about, you know, why you feel so strongly about this. And the guy wound up welcoming him into his home. So, you know, when I talk to Steve about some of the things he's been through, you know, it really gets me wondering, what is it that allows one person to ask and ask and ask for what they want, and other people wind up stopping themselves before they even pop the very first question? And I'm going to share a couple of reasons behind that. The numbers to call, 866-254-1579, toll-free, 866-254-1579, or from outside the United States, 001-760-918-4300. One of the reasons, one of the secrets behind being able to ask for what you want is just recognizing that you can ask anyone for anything when you make it okay for them to say no. And you know, very often we have difficulty around sort of the word no. We don't want to hear it, so, you know, we don't ask questions that the answer could be no to. The flip of that is when we ask for things, we don't want to pressure the person that we're asking. And the reason that it feels like we're pressuring them is because it's not really okay with us for them to say no. And as you kind of increase your ability to not take the word no personally, no matter how dramatically the no might be delivered, like with Steve's nose, that's really the key to success in getting what you want. Not because people will always say yes, but because you don't get emotionally devastated if they don't say yes. And in fact, what I've found working with clients over the years is the more comfortable that you can get with hearing the word no, the less likely you're going to get caught up I sometimes say all salespeople have PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, because they get more and more fearful of asking because they've been hit by these no's in a very personal, very emotional way. So one of the things that can make it a lot easier to face up to the possibility of a strong no, which if you're asking a request, and particularly if you're making a bold request, in other words, there's a difference between asking for the time and asking for the order. But if you're making a particularly bold request, when you understand where no comes from, it's often a lot easier to hear it. So there's really three things that I've found are the source of no. And one is somebody's fear that you're going to make them hear something they don't want to hear or do something they don't want to do. So one of the reasons that, you know, people are often very quick to sort of push away anything that seems remotely salesy is they don't want to be caught up in some sort of a trap, some sort of a thing where you're going to say you want 5 minutes and you're going to take half an hour, and then you're going to somehow manage to con them out of their money. So the no is a protection mechanism in that case. They're trying to protect themselves from what they're worried you're going to do to them. A second reason people say no is because they don't have enough information or they don't have enough understanding about what's in it for them. In other words, about, you know, very often we think of sales as a one-way street. You've got what I want. You've got the money. So I've got to sell you. I've got to get what I want from you. Or I actually was talking recently to some wonderful organization up in San Francisco that's doing some fundraising. And they were very much caught up in that idea that the people that they're talking to have something that they want and they have to somehow ethically, wonderfully, lovingly get it from them. When in fact, if what you're really wanting is something wonderful, is something that will be of benefit to you, benefit to them, benefit to humanity, it's much easier to ask for when you are aware of that, and it's much easier for them to listen when they're aware of that. Sometimes I talk to people who have mailing lists that they've gotten over the internet, and they will say to me, they'll say, I'm trying to get this new product out. And I'll say, well, you know, what was the response you got from your list? And they say, oh, I didn't want to mail my list about it because I just mailed them last week. Now, that's a really interesting, that seems to be good common sense until you really think about it. Because the only reason that I wouldn't mail my list too often is if I was always with my mailings trying to get from them. You know, the analogy I sometimes use is, you know, would you not mow somebody's lawn today because you might want to mow it again for them next week? You know, if what you're offering is really of value to them, it doesn't matter how often you contact them. I'm not saying about being nuts about it, but if each time you're genuinely offering something that may be of real benefit to them, people aren't going to be offended by that. You know, they may or may not be interested, but they're certainly not going to be offended. And so you don't need to fear the no. Now, the third thing that could be behind a no and is sometimes behind a no, it's just an awareness, and it's a genuine awareness on their part that for whatever reason, they just don't want to be, do, or have, or get whatever it is that you're requesting them to be, do, have, or get. Now, here's the thing. If the no is coming from a lack of information, it's still impersonal. It's up to you whether or not you're going to continue speaking with them until they've got enough information to make an informed decision. If they're saying no because they really don't want to, it's still nothing to do with you. It's just a statement from them to them about their willingness to kind of trust their own intuition, awareness, and knowing, and kind of go with themselves. If their response is coming from fear, which is that first one, that sort of fear that you're going to make them do something they don't want to do, that's still impersonal. Okay, that's still not to do with you. That's about their internal state, not you, not your request. So here's the thing. Why is it that we take no so personally, if it's such an impersonal thing to request? And the reason that I found that most people seem to take no very personally is because they're not making a clean request. People tend to put their self-image and their self-esteem and even their sense of like physical survival on the line, along with whatever we're requesting. So instead of just like my asking you for a sale or asking you for a job or asking for your hand in marriage, the subtext behind it is, you know, would you please, you know, give me this job and approve of me and affirm me as a human being and ensure that I have whatever I need to survive and just let me know that I'm worthy of your acceptance and being alive. Now, that's a big ask. Okay, that's a tall order for anyone. It's a particularly tall order for anyone you don't know pretty very, very well. So one of the simplest ways to overcome the fear of asking for what you want is just a simple noticing. And it's noticing where your attention is. And what you'll find is if your attention is on you, you're going to struggle. And if your attention is on them, you're going to find it easy. Because when it's on you, it's your self-image, your self-worth, whatever it might mean to you for them to say yes or to say no, of course you're going to feel fear and you're going to feel discomfort. But when you turn that light of attention onto the other person and how what you're asking is going to benefit them and serve them, literally, I've seen people who were terrified of sales, the discomfort disappears, and in the next moment, they can ask and ask and ask. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Suzanne in Montreal. Suzanne, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Oh, Michael, this is so cool. I'm so happy to be speaking to you.
Yay.
I used to listen to you like exercising in the morning. I'm on my bike and there you go. But now
how were you able to listen to me exercising in the morning?
I thought I did that really privately.
No.
And I just keep on going. My husband walks by and goes, hey, how's it going? I go, yeah. He goes, and he leaves, you know, but that's okay. So anyways, I'm calling because I'm getting a lot of no's. I'm like in the last 3 years been on a really, really interesting project venture. I have an outstanding product for an industry that I know could use my product. And I get no's. and it's rough. So I'm at a point where I think I have to maybe go out and license what I do, which I don't really want to do because I think,
Well, let me jump in, Suzanne, because the most interesting thing that you said, and it's something I hear all the time, but, and it is rough.
Well, okay, it's rough
what's rough about it?
Well, what's difficult is having something to offer and a product that you know would be a beautiful addition to what they already sell, would be a tangible memory of having eaten exactly what I do is for chocolate.
Mm-hmm.
And I know my cards would make people just think of that great product they've eaten and make them smile for a really long time and probably make them think that they want to buy some more.
Mm-hmm.
And so, either they have, like, in-house designing,
yeah,
or they're small and they're scared and they're protectionist, and that's bad. So,
So here's the question, Suzanne.
Yeah.
That's interesting information.
Yeah.
What are you making up about it that's making it difficult for you to keep moving forward?
What am I making up?
So, in other words, that's what's happened, is you've asked a certain number of people, and a certain number said yes, and a certain number said no.
Yeah.
And then and you've given me a couple of the reasons that people have given for why they said no. So that's information. But in order for that information to have an emotional impact on you, which it sounds like it does, you need to be making something up about that information. You need to be drawing some conclusion from it that you don't like. So what's the conclusion you're drawing from that feedback that to you is daunting or worrying or frightening or whatever it is?
Well, I'm not sure if it's financial on their part.
Okay, and if it wasn't financial, if it was financial, what would that mean? What might that mean that would concern you?
What would that mean? You've got me, Michael. I'm not sure where you're going.
Well, it's actually just to the answer of that question. So what might you be concerned would happen if it turned out that the reason people weren't buying your cards was they couldn't afford them?
Well, that means I have to go and print in China.
Okay, great.
So
okay, great. So you've just found out one of the reasons that that's uncomfortable to you, because you've got a concern that if you have to lower your price, you have to lower your costs, and the things you think you would have to do to lower your costs aren't things you want to do.
I want to give work to people who have to feed families, and
great.
That means going to decent printers.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I love that you're saving the world by giving them your money. That's cool.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess that if you decided that one of the things that was worthy of your creative time was finding ways of producing the cards less expensively that continued to support the people that you want to support, that you could come up with all sorts of ways. So this is a loaded question. I always try and be honest if a question is loaded or if it's just a question. This is a loaded question.
So it's downgrade the quality then.
I didn't say that at all. Why would you want to do that?
Because I'm printing on really, really expensive, beautiful stock.
Okay, but so here's my loaded question for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. How many hours have you spent putting your creativity to finding a way to lower the price without devaluing the product?
I haven't considered that.
Okay, so that's the only reason you don't have an answer to that question is because you haven't spent any time asking it yet.
Okay.
And when you do, you may still decide you don't want to make those changes. You may still decide that you want to keep the price as it is. You may even decide to put up the price, but you're going to be deciding that based on information, not based on fear.
Interesting.
You're back at choice in relation to that.
Yeah.
Now, there's another half I want to ask you about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If the reason that they're not buying the cards wasn't money, what are you concerned that might mean? In other words, what if it's not that they're not buying it because they can't afford it? What are you making up might be the other reasons?
Maybe I'm not speaking. I should go enlarge the market then.
Okay, sure. That's one thing you could do.
Okay. So what happens if you have contacted the Macy's and the big chains and
okay, but see, Suzanne, you're doing it again. You're stuck in one answer to a question that has 1,000 answers.
Okay,
so don't do the one that doesn't work. Come up with the other 500 that you haven't tried yet, and then pick your 20 favorite. So that's your homework. Your homework is to take those two questions. Mm-hmm. How can I get these cards to a wider market?
Yeah.
And how can I lower the cost without decreasing the quality? And spend at least an hour a week on those questions for the next month. And see what happens.
I will phone you back.
I'm looking forward to it.
Thank you, Michael.
Okay, we're going to be back with more of you, and more of your thoughts and questions about having what you want, and more of my thoughts on how to ask anyone for anything right after this break.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're talking about how to ask anyone for anything and also just about having what you want in any area of your life. And we're going to go straight back to the phones. We're going to go to Mary in Colorado Springs. Mary, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. It just seems to be a really intense transition time for me right now, as many other people. And
okay, from what to what?
Well, from my whole life as I've known it seems to be dissolving before my very eyes over the past year or two.
Okay, and this isn't one of those kind of fun dissolvings that came in the 60s after hallucinogens?
No, not at all.
No. Okay, just checking.
My entire family pretty much has transitioned, and my marriage has ended, and my child is graduating, my only child, and my professional career is up in the air, and I keep trying to stay in a higher vibration and positive energy and try and manifest, and I don't know. I guess I was just looking for some insight.
So One of the things that I've always found a useful guideline is cope, then deal. That, you know, there's a time to put your energy into manifestation and creation and, you know, developing all sorts of wonderful new things. And there's a time... I'm about to go into like, there is a season, turn. But there really is, you know, there's a time to also kind of go inside and heal and reconnect to that deeper self that isn't touched by all these transitions. Because there is a part of you that isn't touched by these transitions, that was whole and perfect before any of those people came into your life. And any of those jobs and situations, and will continue to be whole and perfect now that they're gone.
Right.
You know, and the more in touch with that part you allow yourself to be, and it really is just an allowing. There's nothing you have to do because that's always there.
Right.
But as you sort of slow down the mind, which is trying to figure it all out and trying to decide what it approves of and what it doesn't approve of and what it wants to change, as you just kind of let yourself be with it, that natural well-being begins to come back. That natural sort of calm and peace begins to come back. And it gets easier then to hear that, you know, I don't know your religious or spiritual beliefs, but that voice of spirit, that still small voice within, that inner guidance, that inner knowing that gets, we lose touch with when we get caught up in trying to make the outside fit what we want it to look like. Does that make sense, just as a starting point?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've been doing a lot of meditation. I've been doing a lot of work. As I said, these transitions have been coming over a series of the past few years. And, you know, I felt like I was pretty focused and on target and doing great manifesting. I started a new business with my partner, and things were cruising along. And then, I don't know, sometimes I just get slammed with this big hit of fear. You know,
so do you know where the fear, do you know where the fear comes from?
I'm sure it comes from, you know, experiences of the past that haven't worked out.
Okay, so I'm going to actually, That was a trick question. See, I said with the last caller, I was really honest about my questions, but I lied about that one. That was a trick question. The fear, the fear comes from your own thinking. In other words, whatever has happened, but it's the present moment thoughts that we react to as if they were real. And because of that, the good news bit about that, and it's not, oh, I must stop thinking that. It's just, I don't need to pay quite as much attention to it as you might have been doing in the past.
Right.
In other words, it's the difference between watching a scary movie in, I was going to say, I'm going to date myself by saying CinemaScope, but I wasn't even alive then, but in IMAX. You know, where it's like surround sound and all around you, and it's very hard to not pay attention to what's going on up on that screen. But if that same movie, the exact same movie about everything that happened in the past and all the bad experiences you've had, was playing on that crappy little black and white in the corner, it would be a lot easier for you to get on with what you want to do, even though that movie was still playing in the background.
Right.
So it's not that you must stop it. It's just that you don't have to listen to it.
Right. Well, and I feel like I deal better with the stuff from the past. It's when I'm cruising along and I get slammed by something, even now.
Okay, so now are you a wrestler?
No.
Okay, because I don't believe that anything's actually slamming you then. I'm not saying it doesn't feel that way. Please hear me. I'm not diminishing your experience. But I'm saying something is happening and you're creating the experience of a slam.
Right.
And again, that extra step is critical, because if there was no extra step, if events could actually slam us, then life would be very scary indeed. And that's the way that a lot of people do experience it. But when you begin to realize, oh, I can slam myself by buying into certain projections about the future or replays of the past, then it gets a lot easier to just ride the ups and downs that will come, because the world doesn't always do exactly what you want and exactly the way that you want it at exactly the time that you'd like it to. Have you noticed that too, or is that just me?
Oh, I've definitely noticed that.
Okay, so that's different though. That's just kind of noticing, oh, there is a kind of a rhythm to things and things don't always go exactly as planned. But that I can deal with. Being slammed continually sounds really scary to me. So I might not want to keep doing that.
Right.
So give me an example of something that you've slammed yourself with. And I know you haven't thought about it that way, but just play with it.
Right. Well, I have some financial issues going on right now dealing with my house.
Okay. So I'm going to take over. I'm going to step in. I'm going to be you for a day. I am a professional actor.
Okay.
Don't try this at home, kids. And I'll get hair and makeup and I'm going to look fabulous. And, but I want to be able to slam myself with that financial situation the way you've been doing it. So what do I need to think in my head? How do I need to use my body? What do I need to do? What's the first thing I need to do to create that feeling of being slammed?
Oh, go into total fear.
Okay, so go into total fear. So now for me, in order to go into total fear, I have to sort of tense my shoulders. I got to hold my breath a little bit, and I've got to make really scary pictures. Is that how you do it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so this is great. Okay, I'm doing that. What should I make the scary pictures of?
Oh, that I'm going to lose my house and don't know where I'm going to live and don't know where my child's going to live and don't, know that my business is going to take off. And
okay, am I about 3 inches tall in this picture and everything else is about 40 feet high?
Yes.
Yeah. No, this is working for me. I'm absolutely terrified. Do you know a number of like a self-help show I can call to get some support? I'm terrified right now.
Yeah, you.
So this is the thing, Mary. As you've probably figured out, despite my clever hiding it behind play acting, once you become aware that that's something that you're doing. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. We all do that. That's the way our brains work. Okay, that's not, there's no shame here, there's no blame, there's no fault. But once you begin to see, oh, yeah, of course, if I think terrifying thoughts in the same ways, if I go to the movies and I go to horror movies one after another, I'm liable to get scared. There is a sort of a place, and it's that place that I was, mentioning at the beginning of the call. There's a place where it's not that the movies aren't playing, but they're the background noise. They're no longer what's in the foreground. What's present is peace. Do you have a sense of what that place is like?
Yeah.
Okay. So I kind of believe Einstein's thing that we should make everything as simple as possible, but not simpler. Mm-hmm. And so the simplest way that I know to move forward in the kind of place that you're in is to just, as best I can, hang out in that place.
Okay.
And one of the things that's sometimes useful is instead of trying to be positive, mm-hmm. just be present and kind. Because if you're present with what's going on and you're willing to be kind with yourself about it, not give yourself a hard time, well, it shouldn't be going on, it's been going on too long, then it's natural that that well-being, that place in you, will begin to come up louder and louder and more present. And from there, your next steps moving forward are always apparent. I was having this conversation with my wife yesterday, and we were talking about some friends, and we both came to the conclusion that at their best, pretty much everyone is pretty much wonderful. And what makes some people seem horrible and some people not is how much time they spend at their best. And so really, there is no more valuable, no more useful, no more important place to put your attention than on that place in you that already knows peace, than on that place in you that is already okay and will continue to be okay regardless of what happens, because from there, you can make all sorts of changes in the movie. But until you're there, the movie's going to be the one that seems to be affecting you. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. That's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mary. Thanks for phoning in. And that is, you know, that's so often the case for all of us is we think that, and it's our conditioning, it's the way that we're taught, but we think that in order to change our insides, the feeling, to make the fear go away, or to increase the motivation, or to make ourselves happy, or to make ourselves sad, we need to change something outside of us. And in fact, the world operates in exactly the opposite way. What we have going on inside us is what's projecting and generating what we're experiencing outside us. And so until once you see that, this is the beauty of it for me. This isn't about developing a new discipline of positive thinking. This isn't about having to change the way you do things. This is just about coming from a different place. And that place is present in all of us. I've never met anyone who doesn't have some reference point for that place of peace inside them, that place of well-being. Now, they may have attributed that to other things in the past. Before they speak to me, they may have thought that that was because their husband loved them, or because they had a good job, or because their parents cared for them, or because of whatever. But it doesn't take long for most people to begin to see that actually, that's just who we are. That's just our nature. And all the stuff that goes on outside us, we can react to or we can respond to. We can use as the raw material of our next creation, or we can use as our excuse for how our life is right now. And that really is just a choice. And it's a choice that gets easier to make the clearer you see it. So one of the interesting things I've been talking about, you know, started the show talking about asking for what you want and why people don't do it. And one of the reasons that people don't do it is because they don't want to risk the disapproval of others, and, you know, that they don't ask for what they want. But if you think about it, where is that desire for approval coming from? In other words, why do you care what this person thinks of you? And when you think it through, most people can begin to see, oh, the desire for approval is really just the desire for safety. It's the desire for well-being. And because the source of safety and the source of well-being is inside you, you're never going to find it by continuing to look for it in the wrong place, which is outside. See, it's not, oh, if I can just get the right job, if I can just manifest this, then I will be okay. No, as you recognize your okayness, it will be easier and easier to create or manifest what you want on the outside. Your happiness, your well-being, your wisdom, all of those come from inside you. They're not the fruit of something that you do. They're the essence of who you are. And there's nothing you can ask for and be given from the outside that's going to fill the hole you've been digging for yourself on the inside. And there's nothing you can ask for and not be given on the outside that can take anything away from the essential you. Now, you know, that's not that's not the only aspect of the need for approval, because another thing which triggers the need for approval, or thoughts about the need for approval, it's not really even a need, because you can not get it and survive just fine, though you probably think you can't, is believing that in some way you're greater than or less than the person of whom you're making the request. And usually it's less than. I always like the Bertrand Russell quote. In America, everybody is of the opinion that he has no social superiors, since all men are equal, but he does not admit that he has no social inferiors. In other words, much as we like to think of ourselves as enlightened, we all have a little bit of one up, one down going on. I always remember I was checking into a hotel and I was stuck in the line behind somebody who was trying to get an upgrade by intimidating the desk clerk. And it wasn't going very well. And his big finish, this was in London, his big finish was, "You better be careful, mate, or I'll tell you who I am." Now, I have no idea who he was. I thought that was a particularly interesting way to try and influence somebody. But the point is that if you're caught up in your insecure thinking about asking, that's, you're probably caught up in some idea of status that might be, you know, real or imagined. You're probably caught up in, you know, some idea of power or relative power. And what most people see is that when you really think about that, and I'd like you to do that, we're coming up on a break, so just do this over the break. Think about the people that you would feel most, you'd find the most difficulty in asking for what you want. And notice if in some way those people have something in common. Are they all people that you think are a little bit better than you or more successful? Are they all people you feel are a bit beneath you or not as successful? Notice in your mind, you hold those people up higher in your mind, literally, is the picture of them bigger than you? Do you hold them down below you? And just, we're gonna pick up on that. We're gonna talk more about that when we come back. So we're gonna be right back after the break. I will talk with you then.
Welcome back to You Can Have What You Want with your host, Michael Neal.
We are back. We're going to go back to the phones in just a minute. But before we do, I want to just finish that thought from before the break and also let you know that a lot of the things we're talking about here are I've written about in my newest book, which is called Supercoach, 10 Secrets to Transform Anyone's Life. And that will be available through Hay House in the United Kingdom and Europe in shops. And I think you'll be able to get it via the website, but you can also find it at my website at www.geniuscatalyst.com. So I remember when I was talking to people, I asked you over the break to think about who you find it easy to ask for stuff and who do you find difficult. And I sort of did a sort of impromptu and extraordinarily unscientific poll actually once amongst friends about the top 10 reasons why you would feel superior or inferior to someone else. And this is what came up. So being larger or smaller in height or weight, being physically stronger or weaker, having a higher or lower degree or qualification, being older or younger, being more or less experienced, being more or less of an expert, being more or less beautiful or handsome, achieving a higher or lower level of success, earning more or less money, and doing more or fewer good works in the world. And it was interesting because, you know, some people would say, oh, I feel less than them because they're younger than me. And other people would say, oh, I feel less than them because they're older than me. So there wasn't one thing consistently at all. It was just, there was always something. And one of the pieces of advice, you've probably heard this, it's advice usually given to salespeople and public speakers to make them feel more comfortable asking or speaking to an individual or group, is to imagine them in their underwear or sitting on the toilet. And just, this is me, but it does make people seem less imposing, but I've always kind of found it gross. You know, it's just like, you know, if I'm going to visualize someone in their underwear, it's because they look really good in their underwear. One of my early mentors was Stuart Wilde. And I remember him teaching us that if we imagined ourselves 30 feet tall, towering over the puny people in the audience, we would feel really comfortable and confident in front of them. And the problem with, you know, seeing somebody on the toilet or in their underwear or as being 30 feet lower than you is that while they do usually lower your nerves, they also kind of dehumanize the people that you're doing it to. And so what you often get, and you've probably experienced this being in an audience, is a speaker who really seems self-confident, but they also seem really kind of arrogant and disconnected. And the problem is, you might feel great because you're 30 feet tall and you can see them on the toilet in their underwear, but they don't care because they don't feel connected to you. And in some cases, they don't even feel acknowledged by you. So making a shift from feeling inferior to the people you're asking to superior is just really trading one way of denying shared humanity for a slightly more pleasant one. So here's my prescription. We're going to get back to the phones in just a minute. If you're hanging on, hold on. I will get to as many of you as I can. But if you cultivate a recognition that you can be unique and still have everything in common with every person on the planet. And you know, if you're wondering what you have in common with the most horrible people on the planet, it's this: you're both doing the best you can based on what you believe and what's important to you to move towards happiness and away from sorrow. And you're both going to die one day. I always loved George Bernard Shaw's line: be patient with the poor people who think they will live forever, which makes death a division instead of a bond. And what I've found, and a lot of my clients have found this, is that when you see the people around you as being both unique and just like you, no better, no worse, that makes it so much easier to love them. It makes it so much easier to feel a deep connection with them. It makes it so much easier to have a long-lasting relationship with them. Now, I will admit, you might not feel as confident as you would if you held yourself being superior, but you get to feel something even better. And that's a sense of ease and well-being, regardless of who you happen to be with. So let's go back to the phones. Let's go to London. Let's go and speak with Maya. Maya, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi, Michael. Thank you for taking my call. I have to say, I love what you do, and you've helped me so much. I mean, over time, you know, just listening to you and reading your books and stuff. Okay, I've got a bit of a funny question. Well, not very funny. I met someone about a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
And can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you fine.
Yeah, okay. And I couldn't handle it because I was quite overweight at the time and he was really cute. Anyhow, I was really mean to him and he backed off. And then when he backed off, I went, tried to get him back. And because I'm quiet, you know, I listen to Hay House. So I told him about past life connection and stuff like that. And he freaked. He totally freaked. Now, I really like the guy because we both do comedy and we have a lot of things in common. And I've been trying to rebuild, like, bridges, but he doesn't want to talk to me. So I'm just trying to find, you know, I'm quite, you know, and I just want to be able to, you know, like, rebuild some form of friendship or relationship. And I don't know how to do that.
So here's the question, Maya. Are you willing to have fun with it? Or does it have to, or does it have to work?
No, absolutely not. Yeah, hey, I've listened to you for quite a while now. No, I'm willing to have fun with it.
Okay, so here's the thing. If you're willing to have fun with it, you know, I bet you can come up with, in a very short space of time, you know, 30 interesting ways to make contact.
Okay.
And they can be very lighthearted. They, you know, you don't have to come off as a stalker.
Okay.
You know,
now, Michael, he, I know he doesn't want to talk to me. So, you know, you're keeping that in mind. You know?
Okay, sure. So I'm going to suggest one of them isn't talking to him.
Okay.
You know, in other words, don't do the ones that you know won't work. It's a difficult strategy, but it's kind of cool.
So
play with it. And, you know, maybe you just go very straight. You know, you start out very straight and you start with a letter. You know, and that just says, hey, I just want you to know I totally get why you're avoiding me. And, you know, at some point I would love to reconnect. And then, you know, you just play with it. And, you know, maybe you just start sending him your thoughts, you know, and say, look, I don't even know if you're reading these or burning them, but that's cool. I'm enjoying writing them. This is what's going on for me right now. And do you know what I mean? If you take the pressure off it to work.
You can
do anything. It's only when you think, oh my God, this has to work, that your creativity gets cut off. And I can tell in you know, our 2 minutes on the air, you've got creativity in spades.
Yeah. Well, you know, I do stand-up comedy, so, you know, I just lose totally my humor when it comes to these questions. But
that's it, is you know that when you've lost your humor, you've started to invest some of your well-being in the outcome. You're no longer just, see, this is what people tend to do. I won't do the long version of this, but people tend to mix up emotional investment and energetic involvement. See, I can get very involved in pursuing a goal without investing any of my well-being in it. But what most people do is they either invest all of their emotions into it, and then that winds up leading to burnout when things don't work out, or they just kind of think, well, I won't do anything. And then, of course, nothing happens. So if you can start playing with the idea of staying involved without getting invested, I think you're going to come up with all sorts of wonderful ways to make contact. And knowing that, you know what, if he chooses for whatever reason to not do that, there are a million other people that you can create as wonderful friends.
No, sure. Yeah. But, you know, I'm there with you. It was really nice to me, and I pushed him away. And we've got a lot of stuff in common, and I'm thinking, ooh. I couldn't
right.
handle,
so here's
like,
here's okay. Yeah. There's one last piece. Let me give you one last piece then, which is let go of the story. Okay, you've got this story. Got this story where what you did in the past is important. What you did in the past is irrelevant. Okay.
All right. Okay.
So take it forward without the story, and you're going to find it a lot
really
lighter.
He's really freaked out. I mean, I freaked him out about a lot of past life stuff. That's part of the story again. I'm going back to the story.
Yes, you are. So we can either talk about the story or you can...
No. Okay. Great. Okay.
All right, Maya. And please do call us back. Let us know how you get on.
I will. Thank you so much.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Okay, let's go straight back to the phones. Let's go to... Ooh, I don't think we've ever had anyone in the East Caribbean. Wanda, welcome to the show. What can I do for you today?
Hi. Okay. Oh, I'm very excited about your topic today.
Excellent.
Because when I read it on the screen, it talked about asking for what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so funny because I was telling one of my girlfriends today, I said, you know what? I have a problem asking people for things. Mm-hmm. And she said, yeah, me too. And I said, well, maybe we need to listen to this show.
Cool. So what's something that you want that you're having trouble asking for?
Well, I wish I could tell you something specific right now. But the thing is, when you were talking to the lady from London and mm-hmm. you said, you know, let go of the stories, I think that's it. Because, you know, I want to ask for something, and then I start to talk myself out of why I shouldn't ask for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Tell me.
Well, no, that's a great strategy for not getting stuff done. do you know what I mean? It's like, yeah, that'll work. You know, I can either have the conversation with the other person or I can have the conversation with the imaginary people in my head. And chances are the imaginary people in my head aren't going to be the best allies moving forward.
Not at all.
You know, and so it really does come back to, at that point, you know, the simplicity of, and I mean, I actually mm-hmm. sometimes get people to do this and they think I'm nuts, and I kind of am looking at them going, you think I'm nuts? But just actually take a moment. And mm-hmm. the next time you're having one of those conversations in your head, look around and see if there's anyone else in the room. And if there's not, it's probably worth stopping that conversation.
You're right.
because the reality is, look, you can be present with yourself. It's not that the voices in your head ever stop or anything like that. And you can experience total quiet 24/7. I don't know many people who do that. And the ones that do usually really work at it. But you can mm-hmm. experience enough quiet. You can experience enough of a slowing down on the inside that your kind of wisdom will guide you, and you know you'll know because you'll be doing it, and you know you'll know that it's shifted because you'll be asking, and you might not notice it at first. You might suddenly notice, like the third person you ask for something, you might suddenly go, "Oh, huh, that wasn't actually difficult." But thinking about it is always so much harder than actually doing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of the key to the whole game. You know, we can talk left, right, and center, but you know, when I break it down for people, you know, and say, well, which bit of making this call are you scared of? Is it picking up the telephone? Well, no. Is it dialing? No. Is it hearing a ringtone? No. Is it hearing their voice on the other end? Yes. Well, what is it about their voice tone that scares you? And you know, what they get is no. What it is that they're actually not on the phone. They're in their head.
Mm.
And what's scary is the movie and radio show that's playing in their head. And because they're in their head, they're scared. Whereas if they were on the phone, they actually, you wouldn't be frightened. You would just be on the phone. Because there's nothing scary about connecting to another human being. In fact, it's what happens naturally when we don't put up a block between us and them.
Wow. Okay, I got it. I've got to, you know, let those other people out.
You know, look, I say to people all the time, there's four of you in this relationship and two of you aren't helping. You know, and those are the two imaginary ones in the head.
That's true.
Wanda, thank you very much for phoning in. Okay, I want to finish today's show with this. One of the books I remember reading years ago on asking was a wonderful little book by Jack Canfield and Mark Victor Hansen called The Aladdin Factor. And they had eight suggestions for how to ask. And I think these are really useful, so I want to finish with these. So number one, ask as if you expect to get it. Number two, ask someone who can actually give it to you. Number three, be clear and specific in your requests. Number four, ask with humor and creativity. We talked a lot about that one during the show. Number five, ask from the heart. Number six, and this is something that people often miss out on, be prepared to give something in order to get something. In other words, you know, if your focus is just on what you want and what you're going to get, you're probably going to be kind of nervous and frightened. The more your focus is on what you can do for them, give to them, help them with, the easier it's going to be. Number seven, can't keep count. Ask repeatedly. In other words, keep asking. Ask, 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 ask. And number eight, be gracious. And this is really the key to the whole thing for me. Be gracious in accepting a no, because people can tell. They can tell if it's okay for them to say no. And if it's okay for them to say no, it's okay for them to listen. And if they don't feel it's going to be okay for them to say no, you might not even get to the point where you get to ask the question. So I hope today's show has been useful. We're going to be back with a brand new show on Living Fearlessly with my friend and guest Steve Chandler next week. Till then, have fun, learn heaps, and I will speak with you then. Bye-bye for now.